Yeah, my name's Kurt W. Wagner.
Okay. And it's September 6th, 2019. We're here in Monmouth University Library, and you are the head of the library.
I'm the university librarian at the Murray and Leone Guggenheim Memorial Library at Monmouth University.
How long have you had that job?
I've been here since January 2016, so it's been about 3.5 years. It'll be 4 years in January.
I know that part of your sort of view of the library has been about sort of shifting the narrative in terms of programming a little bit and trying to develop the collection. I know you're really active in the regional librarian network.
Yep.
And of course, one of the things really interesting for me as a historian, I work a lot with librarians and librarians, archivists, special collections, the important work of the library in terms of like being a platform for a lot of work around digital humanities and a lot of cultural programming. And many institutions I work with go through the library, so thank you for all your hard work.
You're welcome.
The nature of this project, as I was explaining before, this archive project is really sort of like an Afrofuturism or history project. Part of the reason that I think it's important to sort of go through this process is that we're sort of at a moment of renaissance around Afrofuturism. So most of my questions are going to be focused on trying to sort of suss out that. And in particular, of course, because of the programming that you have here at Monmouth, this semester that's sort of exploring questions of Afrofuturism, it's a great opportunity to talk to you, especially from your perspective as a librarian, about what you think Afrofuturism is. Mm-hmm. So my first question for you is, how would you define Afrofuturism?
Well, I've just kind of myself begun to learn about it through my association with Walter Grayson, and everyone knows, or at least has some understanding, I believe, of African-American culture in most places. Universities that I've either worked at or known about have programs or majors in Africana studies or African-American culture, that kind of thing. Monmouth itself doesn't, and I found that a little surprising when I came here. Learning about Afrofuturism basically came through my friendship with Walter. I really didn't know much about it at all. But through that relationship and my growing understanding and perception of it, I believe Afrofuturism is kind of a reframing of a narrative that probably began way back, as far back even as, slavery in 1619 and the inequality and the realization that one people keeping another in bondage was not right. And what all the things, though, that were then denied that person through slavery. And almost everything was denied those people. And then as slavery ended and emancipation, and this is like the way this exhibit seems to unfold, as different forms of bondage or servitude or slavery were overcome and surpassed, there always seemed to be something else that was still denied black people. And it seemed like it's almost like the, Maslow's pyramid kind of things, different priorities, different intellectual priorities. And some of the higher ones are more higher ways of thinking, access to knowledge, imagination and dreams. And it seems to me that ability to imagine is one of the last things that was denied black people. They had no fantasy, they had no speculation, they had no ability to, because so many more fundamental things were the priority of them. So it just seems to me the final emancipation is the ability to speculate and dream and have a fantasy, an ability to create science fiction, dream in ways that I believe was just more accessible to white people, more privileged, or other classes of people. So to me, that's kind of the final realization. When you have the freedom to dream, and you have the freedom to even speculate and write and produce literature, that's unbound by the past, where it's not just all I'm writing about is how I overcame something. I'm now writing about some future world that doesn't even know anything about that past. So that's kind of my view of Afrofuturism, is just this long process, and finally I've kind of overcome that past, and I'm free.
Okay. You mentioned the exhibit that happened here at Monmouth.
Yes.
So could you tell us the title of that exhibit?
Oh, well, the title is called Afrofuturism, Afrofuturist Design from Ancient Dogon to Wakandan Futures.
Right.
And so it's really just a profile from, it's a kind of a historic timeline of how Afrofuturism is based in the past studies of African history, and then through the African American experience, through the period of slavery and emancipation, and then Jim Crow, and then the Great Migration and the Harlem Renaissance, how African American culture has evolved and progressed and struggled, finally, to this day now achieving a kind of a literary and art freedom, perhaps that didn't exist in the past, and allows just a different way of expressing or reframing a relationship with art and design and literature that's wonderful, vibrant, beautiful, and it really allows expression that I think just gives new perspective to things like science fiction and fantasy.
When you think about your role as university librarian and an exhibit like this, is there a particular challenge that you see in terms of library practice in Afrofuturism? Are there opportunities related to this sort of like alternative narrative that you sketched out?
Well, I think part of what I've been trying to do with the library since I came here is to, in similar ways, reframe the perception of the library's role at the university. And I think this is not something unique to my approach or what I've been doing. I think this ties in nicely with how libraries everywhere, especially academic libraries, but not limited to academics, have had to kind of reframe the narrative of what libraries mean in society today, with, of course, information availability being in large part online, moving to more and more online ability to retrieve information, and now several generations of people being born digital, and maybe with less of a realization or a understanding of the role and purpose of physical libraries and the value of print resources, it makes finding ways to show that the library still has relevance and importance and value more and more my job. And so looking for every way to show the value of the library is really what I've been focusing on. Bringing exhibits to the library is one, I believe, important way of underscoring the library's role as being a interdisciplinary center of the university, a place where new ideas, perhaps disruptive ideas, ideas that challenge your way of thinking, ideas that maybe introduce new concepts, new topics, new subjects, new studies, new realms, are exactly what I consider to be the value of the library. I always looked at libraries as being a place where your mind gets changed. Not only a place where you learn about things, you learn about subjects, you learn about, find answers to questions maybe that you had, but places where you go and while you're doing that, you might learn things you didn't know, where you, perhaps you would call it getting distracted or, you know, going down a rabbit hole or something like that, but yes, that sharp left turn when you're looking for psychological theory and you just discovered some other aspect of literature that you didn't know existed and you follow that direction for a while and maybe you come out of the library a different person knowing something that you didn't even know existed before that could profoundly change what you're going to study and what you're going to do here at the university and maybe for your life and career. To me, that's the most exciting and profound thing that a library stands for. And when I say change your mind, change the way you think about the world. And I believe libraries have the potential for that. And so to me, this Afrofuturist exhibit is a perfect example of, oh, I never thought about African culture. I never thought about the African-American experience. I never thought about, oh, what I always thought was talking about civil rights or things like that. This takes it to a different level of analysis. This takes it to the kind of a convergence of art and literature and speculation and history and religion all mashed together and remixed in a different way. And where else could that happen, I believe, but at a library? I think that's just a wonderful place for this to happen.
And it's really interesting because, of course, one of the things about a lot of our conversations about futurism is around knowledge creation. Yeah. And so when we think about the library as a repository of information, you think about the library as a platform for facilitating new kinds of conversation. You know, thinking about this exhibit, was there a ease in finding this material? Like, you know, there was a question here about, like, are the narratives that are represented by Afrofuturism there? We don't know they're there. And the importance of this exhibit is that it's bringing people's attention to it. Or is there a process that you have to think about from the library standpoint? Or we need to do more to collect certain kinds of material. What's the tension there from your perspective as the library?
Well, there's a lot there to unpack for sure. I believe it's a matter of relationship building, finding people who are interested in using the library, showing their students the value of the library. And this relates back to Walter Grayson and our relationship. And on some of my early days here in the library, part of what we do at academic libraries is our librarians divide up the departments on campus, and each librarian, depending on the size of the librarian faculty we have, has one or more departments that they are liaisons with or responsible for, meet with, interact with, build relationships with, and they form the channels of communication so that we know in the library what we need to collect, what programs of study we need to make sure our collections can support, which databases our students need, all of that interaction with the departments in the syllabi. And another aspect of this is that we provide research instruction, library instruction, bibliographic instruction, whatever it's called at your institution. The librarians provide four classes, customized sessions of instruction on how to navigate all the library's resources, how to answer the kind of questions they need to complete the assignments in their courses, and at a higher level, how to conduct academic research. And so part of our constant challenge is making sure our faculty are aware of the services we offer, the expertise within the library faculty to provide this support for their students' research, and to try and increase the number of sessions that we teach. At some institutions, they have mandatory information literacy sessions taught by librarians. We do not. So we do not teach credit-bearing courses ourselves, like at some universities. So we rely on our ability to establish relationships with our faculty. And luckily, you know, 100 or so sessions per academic year, we're in there teaching, doing our thing, promoting our library and its resources, and helping our students, you know, use the library and its tools more effectively. But then I noticed Walter doing something a little different. Suddenly, he was not scheduling classes with the librarians. He was bringing his own classes to the library, not once, but several times over the course of a semester. I remember approaching him, just meeting him practically for the first or second time, and going, "What are you doing?" And he sat down and explained that he would bring his class here three times. Once when they were first starting out, again as his assignments were evolving, and then later for a more advanced look. And he would have his students start forming topics they were interested in exploring, then looking up reference materials on that topic, coming to him to talk about those sources, and then with his guidance and suggestions going into the main stacks to find even more in-depth information. And in the process of doing this, they were not only learning about their topics, they were learning about the value of using the library as a research tool. And so they were being taught lessons on several different levels in an in-depth manner that was even beyond what we as librarians were often able to do in our limited exposure to classes. And so I was fascinated by his approach. I told him several times, I wish we could bottle this and sell this. I encouraged him to do a session at our Center for Teaching Excellence, which is a group here on campus, an office here on campus that's used for professional development for our faculty. So he was able to present his method, his library research support method that he uses in his classes, and several other faculty have taken his cue and are using versions of that in their own class, and which was exactly what I wanted them to do, just to improve their students' ability to use the library and its resources. So, you know, that was kind of a relationship I built with Walter, and through continued conversations with him, we just got to be good friends and talked about a lot of things. And then suddenly I was selected to be the chair of the search committee for our dean of the honor school, and Walter was a candidate. And we had a lot of very fine candidates, but as it turned out, Walter's enthusiasm and abilities and background and the whole package won the day, and he was, for a couple of years, was our dean of our honor school, and I had the privilege of sharing a floor with him here at the library and having him next door to me, and so our relationship continued over the past couple of years there with daily conversations, and from time to time our conversation would turn back to what he was interested in, and Afrofuturism figured prominently in that, and so over those years I learned a little more about it. Until the time came when my outreach to campus to bring more interest in interaction with the library had already been finding other ways to showcase what's going on campus in the form of having different exhibits in the library. And after having an exhibit of featuring the Art Now committee on campus, which highlights our art and performing arts and communication faculty and the projects they do. I showcased that in exhibits to the library, and then we did a big exhibit featuring our Bruce Springsteen archives in the library, and we did one on the centennial of World War I I remember talking to Walter, do you have one in the wings that we could do an exhibit for? And then I also said, and I think I know what it's going to be. And so we started talking about having this exhibit. And so to me, it all serves a larger purpose of engaging the library with the intellectual work we do here on campus. It's making the library a center for reframing narratives, re-examining topics maybe in different ways, exposing people to knowledge that maybe they had not thought of before or considered before or considered in this way before. And I think the banner you see as you walk into the library, create knowledge at the library, it's also something I hold really near and dear, because I think it's here you put pieces together and assemble things that maybe you hadn't considered before and come out with something new that you've created.
And, you know, as in partnership with the sort of scholar that Walter is, you guys are providing the space. And a lot of this material is your material, right?
Yeah.
Because it's coming from the
right.
collection, right?
Right. And so it's, you know, it's like you could probably do 100 different exhibits in this library with 100 different scholars who recombine what they find here in different ways. I'm not trying to detract from this, because I think this is outstanding. I think, though, that kind of thing can probably be replicated, you know, in some other ways. I think the next one we have on deck is going to be on climate change and how that affects. And I've even had the conversation with Walter about the climate change one and how it affects people with less opportunities are usually at lower elevations and maybe in the tropics and in countries with other social problems and other economic issues, and how, you know, the effect on them will be unequal. And it's always a matter of privilege and who's able to or who's the victim and different things like that. So I think this gives the library many, many different opportunities to bring subjects together in novel ways, to maybe think about things in different combinations. I think that also probably happens, you know, when people do cluster classes and they have a psychology professor and an environmental science professor or an economist and an art historian start talking about different facets of a topic. And I like to have the library also as kind of a fulcrum on which these things can balance.
From your perspective, is the library in a position to continue this particular conversation around Afrofuturism in a particular way? Is the exhibit, which I know is going to be up most of the semester,
mm-hmm.
What's your follow-up for this? Is this something where, like, well, now that we've done it, hopefully the students will follow up or professors will be inspired? Or is there more of, like, an institutional approach that you might think about in terms of, like, some of these conversations?
I'm not sure, but, I think it could give impetus to the creation of, you know, someone who wants to put the work in at an academic curriculum level to create a proposal for a major or a department or something like that, Africana studies, Africana world studies or something like that, in which Afrofuturism would play a part. You could certainly propose a course in Afrofuturism, with even a cluster approach where you had people from art history, you had people from sociology, you had people from our history department, team teaching or teaching a sequence of courses that led to this. We also created a couple of LibGuides, which are used at, you know, many colleges and universities to support different courses or different subjects. We've created several for this project. Those will continue. Those will still be links on our webpage. Hopefully the products of this, the books will always be in the collection. I may be helping our catalogers maybe add some subject heads to all the books in this collection. Maybe so if you type Afrofuturism in our in our catalog, all these books will come up. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that's the one of the neat things about having electronic records that can be tagged, if you will. You know, you don't have to have separate physical collections. You can have many, many virtual collections just by having everything shelved normally. If they're tagged in such a way, I could make all, you know, 372 books in this collection all come up in one search. So,
well, it, you know, it's really interesting because I think one of the things about knowledge creation that we associate with the library is metadata, right?
Mm-hmm.
I teach a lot of students. We do a lot of sessions in the library. We talk a lot about metadata. And part of the reason we talk about it is because there's a real question about how do we understand the creation of knowledge in society, because it's sort of invisible. Like you have a set of structures that are in place, and then people show up and they adopt the structures. They never really stop to think about them. And so it's really interesting to think about.
It made me write down Afrofuturism as a subject heading. Does that exist? What are the politics of creating a subject heading? Who decides, is that a subject?
Right, well, that's exactly what I want to ask you, because I think that's one of the things that isn't super clear all the time. Of course, the Library of Congress,
mm-hmm.
Dublin Core System.
That's where you would go. You would go to OCLC to look for, that's where we get our catalog records, our copy cataloging. But we're free to add fields. We're free to add metadata. We can do locally created, you know, subject fields and things like that. We already have a collection of Irish history books that were donated by a retired faculty member who collected these books and then donated them and wanted them kept as kind of a corpus or a body of books, and they're actually shelved in one collection. For a while, they made a decision, oh, well, they're all tagged Flannery collection, so they could just go into the regular summer in history, summer in literature, varied, like summer in geography. But they're all tagged, so all you have to type is Flannery and you can see them all. But then someone else said, yeah, but I wanted to see them all on a shelf. And so, you know, especially where we have a thing like Afrofuturism that spans so much of our collection, where it wouldn't be really right, you know, to put, you know, I don't know, would, you know, we couldn't really, I don't know if we could have Octavia Butler,
right,
you know, like on the same shelf with Du Bois,
yeah, right,
you know, because subject-wise they go in different places. But we can certainly do that with metadata, and we can certainly do that with our libguides. We can certainly have bibliographies created. But I like the fact of using our subject headings, and there's got to be, I mean, Afrofuturism is not a new topic, and is not a, we didn't just make this up. I think it's probably in there. It's just, I think, a matter of, and I may be in a position to, at least in this collection, say, as we are checking these back out of our exhibit location and into our main collection, again at the close of this exhibit, I can say, let's take a moment and add an Afrofuturism tag to them, or a locally created subject heading, just so that we can say, we want to keep an eye on this collection, or we want to be able to kind of preserve the continuity of this set of works, because it's an important collection within a collection.
And how difficult is that decision? Like, you know, what you just talked about, that's a significant thing in terms of future people's engagement with the collection.
Yeah.
And so I guess my question is, like, as a library professional, what goes into, like, that moment? Like, you're the head of the library, so you just decided, like, yes, but from a kind of institutional standpoint,
sure.
What's the challenge?
Well, you know, probably from a shared governance perspective, I would at a librarian meeting say, hey, you know, we put a little investment into this. We, with Walter's help, we selected these titles. They are legitimately a part of our collection. They represent, I think, a significant set of resources in our collection. This exhibit is substantial, I feel. And we have a record of having kind of specially tagged collections already, you know, like the one I just talked about, the Flannery, the Irish history one. So I would ask for the librarian faculty to approve that, something like that. And I don't think there's much more to the politics than that. I think it has significance, and if I think something has significance, and it, depending on how, I like to do things with consensus, even if it is kind of my idea or something, I like other people to maybe share that that's, I don't see, what would the downside of that be? I think if we were making up maybe a subject heading or something like that that didn't exist, but I'm willing to bet money on if I go to Library of Congress subject heading and subject authority records right now, there is a subject heading for this. Right. So to me, it's a very low or no risk proposal to be able to add a little bit of metadata cataloging to these records to just appropriately tag them for future reference. Because part of what we're doing here by having this exhibit is to educate ourselves and educate people who come to the library and see this. And I've even had senior faculty conversations right in the corridor outside my office here who I'm talking with and saying, oh, we're putting this exhibit together. What do you think? So conversation with a senior faculty in one of our departments yesterday, and the person said, I'm not even sure what Afrofuturism is. And so I had an opportunity there to just share my understanding of it and saying, I don't even understand it completely, but I'm learning more about it. And I'm appreciating it more as a body of knowledge, and we're all learning about it together. And the person came away with a little knowledge they didn't have before, or maybe a glimmering, a little more understanding of something. And to me, that's what this is all about. And so as we're all learning about this, I think we can also improve our metadata, our collection itself by... That makes our collection a little smarter. Now, if someone types in Afrofuturism, they get will get a substantial result. I think right now you don't get much when you type that in our catalog.
Well, I really appreciate you taking the time to talk to me about Afrofuturism, about the exhibit, and about your views, your view as the head of the library. I really appreciate it. Thank you.
Well, it's completely my pleasure. Really, really enjoyed talking to you.